The day after Russian troops invaded Ukraine, Russia's ambassador to the European Union claimed that it was an operation to enforce peace. Since then, entire cities in Ukraine have been destroyed. Hundreds of civilians have been killed, according to the United Nations, and Russia has been accused of war crimes. Is peace possible while bombs continue to drop? And what's Russia's end goal in Ukraine? I'll ask Russian ambassador to the European Union, Vladimir Chizhov, in an upfront special. Vladimir Chizhov, thank you for joining me on Upfront. On February 25th, you claimed Russia's actions in Ukraine were not an invasion, but, quote, a peace enforcement special military operation. Since then, thousands have died. More than 3.5 million people have fled Ukraine, and tensions are higher in Europe than they've been since World War II. How was this an enforcement of peace?
Well, indeed, I can confirm it is a special military operation rather than an invasion, and of course, certainly not an act of aggression. You say thousands of people died. Well, I will say that according to UN sources, civilian casualties during this last month have been less than 1,000, but still every life counts, I agree. Also, the almost 14,000 civilian lives that were lost in the preceding 8 years in Donbas as a result of actions by the Ukrainian army and the so-called nationalist battalions.
So the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights recorded actually 2,421 civilian casualties in the country, 925 killed and 1,496 injured. But to the bigger point you're making here, if you see violence in the Donbas region, why invade the whole country? Why attack Lviv, for example?
Well, the answer is quite simple, and the reasons are quite logical. If the situation in Donbas proper is settled without any change in the policies of the Kiev regime, then that boundary between the two now independent republics of Donbas and the Ukrainian government-controlled territory would have become a constant source of tension and clashes, including the use of firepower and military actions.
With Russian forces everywhere, with tanks rolling through cities, would you, in retrospect, still say that this has been an enforcement of peace?
Actually, the tanks are not rolling through cities. The Russian armed forces are acting very, I would even say delicately, without actually entering big cities like Kyiv or Kharkov. The idea is not occupation. It is not destruction of civilian quarters. It is not taking civilians as hostages the way the Ukrainian nationalist battalions are currently doing. It is to wipe out the central, the points of command and control of the Ukrainian armed forces and to ensure demilitarization of the country. The problem on the ground today is that the opposing side, the Ukrainian army, and more importantly, those so-called territorial defense battalions, the nationalists, some of them openly neo-Nazis, they use the civilian population as a human shield. They establish their tanks, APCs, and artillery among residential areas, inside the residential areas, among the buildings where people still live, and they take those civilians hostage. When Russia proposed to have humanitarian corridors established, it was the nationalist groups that prevented people from leaving along.
So there is considerable. I hate to interrupt you there, but there's just considerable disagreement with this account, not just by Ukrainian sources, but by the international community, human rights organizations, journalists, almost everyone who has stood in opposition to this these proceedings, but certainly that account. But I have to move on. On February 15th, President Vladimir Putin said that Russia did not want war in Europe. On February 16th, you yourself were quoted as saying there will be no escalation in the coming week or in the week after that or in the coming month. And then less than 10 days later, your country invaded Ukraine. What happened?
Well, first of all, we didn't invade Ukraine in the sense of the word. But there was no other option than to launch this special military operation. I'm sorry to say that, because actually up to the last moment, as you can see from my own statements and those of President Putin and Foreign Minister Lavrov, we wanted to avoid this course of events. But now, with the benefit of hindsight, I can confirm that the Ukrainian
Well, let me ask you about that, though, sir.
Let me finish.
I just want to ask you a question about a point.
We're preparing to launch an offensive attack on the Donbas republics. So what action the Russian side took was to prevent that another bloody massacre in Donbas.
Your contention is that, based on your remarks, that you didn't know and that President Putin didn't know. Intelligence reports were saying that this was going to happen. People around the world were saying this was going to happen. One could look at these developments and not say, oh, this was a last-minute change of action, but rather that the Russian government was simply dishonest about what was going on. How do you make sense of or respond to this idea that intelligence reports were saying that there was an invasion coming, and then there was an invasion coming?
Well, whose intelligence reports? Many intelligence reports tend to be misleading, as modern history has shown. Let me remind you of 2003, the war in Iraq, and the white powder in the hands of Colin Powell.
Yeah, that would be an example of a dishonest, inaccurate intelligence report. I agree. But in this case, it was accurate. They said you were going to invade, and you invaded. So to some, again, this would make it hard to trust the Russian government, to depend on your analysis or your word, or for even you as a diplomat. If you didn't know it was going to happen, how can we, in future conversation, in future analysis, in future processes of diplomacy, trust that you know what's going on with your own government?
It's not an issue of somebody knowing in advance what the plans would be and what the actual situation. It's the course of events, the intelligence evidence that we received that the Ukrainian army was planning an offensive attack on the two Donbas republics. That was the last straw. And I would even end to that. Remember President Zelensky appearing at the Munich Security Conference a few days before this event unfolded, and he openly claimed that he does not exclude Ukraine becoming a nuclear power, obtaining nuclear weapons. And the whole audience, all the Western participants, they stood up and applauded that speech. How should Russia view that as support of destruction of the non-proliferation regime, of an immediate threat next door to Russia?
One could actually argue that any disruption of a non-proliferation agreement would be coming from Russia. Ukraine yielded all of its nuclear weapons in exchange partly for sovereignty, and that's the very thing that's being violated now. But we have to keep going here. The UN International Court of Justice in The Hague has ordered your country to halt its invasion of Ukraine because of a lack of evidence to justify the war. The Council of Europe has expelled your country from its human rights body, and the UN has overwhelmingly voted to reprimand Russia's actions in Ukraine. Are your government's actions not a glaring violation of international law?
Of course not. First of all, the Council of Europe did not expel Russia. Russia made a decision to withdraw from the Council of Europe. That was the day before any actions were taken in Strasbourg. Secondly, the International Court of Justice has taken its decision on a wrong, legally unsound basis. So we do not have any intention of following up on that. And in the United Nations, look at what's happening around the Russian draft of a Security Council resolution on the humanitarian situation. Western countries are trying to block it, unfortunately, because it is biased, and we know that Western countries, in particular the United States, are trying to influence many developing countries and other countries of the world into following their version of events and their course of action, which is totally unfair and does not do credit either to the United States or those other Western countries that are following suit.
Yeah, just a quick fact check. On March 16th, several weeks into the invasion, the Council of Europe expelled Russia from the continent's foremost human rights body. They said the Russian Federation ceases to be a member of the Council of Europe as of today. That's March 16th at the 47-nation organization. Did that. Also, the International Court of Justice says that there wasn't sufficient evidence of a claim of genocide to justify Russia's actions and so forth. But again, let's keep moving, because earlier this month, Russian forces bombed a maternity hospital, in spite of an agreement to a 12-hour pause intended to allow civilians to escape. Now, the Associated Press, the World Health Organization, the UN, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, they all affirm this claim. There are witnesses to this. Everyone has declared that this has happened. Are you saying that it didn't happen, or are you saying that it's not a war crime to bomb a maternity hospital?
Well, this is a flagrant case of fake news spreading by Western media and Western governments. The Russian army did not bomb a maternity hospital in Mariupol or anywhere else. That maternity hospital had been occupied by the Azov Nationalist Battalion since the end of February. That is about 10 days before the alleged bombing took place there, and they kicked out all the doctors, all the pregnant women, all the newborn babies, and established themselves inside that maternity hospital. That is a fact. That is actually, if you look closely, even to the video footage of the situation there, don't you have any questions? Why, after this bombing, all the trees in the garden in front of the maternity hospital are left standing? Why there is only one single ostensibly pregnant woman being carried by people who have nothing to do with the medical profession and nobody else? Well, and the house behind that, the building behind them, is vacant. There is nobody else.
Just so that I'm clear and I understand, because you're saying that there was only one woman. First of all, there were images of several bloodstained pregnant mothers fleeing a blown-out hospital. We've seen images. Are you saying, I just want to ask for clarity's sake, are you suggesting that those images are fake?
Yes.
Okay. Let's keep going. What about the bomb that was dropped last week on a theater in Mariupol, where hundreds of civilians were sheltering? We have satellite images easily visible from an aircraft that revealed that outside of this building, painted in very large letters, was the word children. That's a war crime, no?
Yes, it was a war crime to paint those letters. And the crime was perpetrated by the same Azov battalion that took a few hundred civilians, put them into the basement of the theater, and on top of that, they established their headquarters in the building. There was no aerial bombardment in Mariupol that can be easily checked by satellite images. The explosion that took place in front of the theater was a result of a detonation of a bomb or an artillery shell placed there by those who had occupied the upper section of the theater. And actually, as a result of that explosion, the civilians that were kept hostages, hostaging downstairs in the basement. They could not leave. And did anyone say how many casualties were there in the theater?
What we know for sure is that hundreds of children were sheltering there. What's indisputable is that a bomb went off. You're simply suggesting that Russia is not responsible for it. That stands, again, in sharp contrast to other accounts, to expert opinion, to outside journalists, and to the very satellite images that you say would exculpate you. But let's keep going. There have been reports that Ukrainian citizens are being forcibly taken to Russia. Forced deportations are recognized, again, as a crime against humanity, according to the International Criminal Court. Is your country taking people against their will?
No. Actually, we are taking people according to their wishes. And Russia, the Russian forces established humanitarian corridors out of Mariupol in different directions, in the direction of the Donbas People's Republic in Russia and in the direction of the government-controlled territory. And it is the nationalist battalions that are preventing people from leaving towards Russia. That is a crime, whereas you know, over 350,000 citizens of Donbas and Ukraine, they voluntarily left to Russia and are accommodated there by the various Russian regional authorities.
Again, the claim here is that between 4,000 and 4,500 Mariupol residents were forcibly moved. But we'll continue to monitor this.
That is a claim that has nothing to do with reality.
Okay, well, we'll continue to watch and see if this is indeed another violation of international law. Let's talk about another group of people who have been suffering as a result of this war, Russians. More than 15,000 people have already been detained across Russia as a result of peacefully protesting your government's war on Ukraine. Human rights groups say that police have used excessive force and, in some instances, degrading treatment and even torture. Do ordinary Russians have a right to disagree?
Of course, Russians have a right to agree or disagree. Actually, the level of support of the government's position in this situation has grown. And the latest figure is 74% of Russians, according to an influential polling result, is in favor fully of what is doing, what the government and the president are doing. I don't know where you got the figure of 15,000. I think it's
15,000. To be precise, 15,088 detentions have occurred at anti-war actions in Russia starting from February 24th. So even if this 74% number that you're saying is accurate, even if the overwhelming number of Russians support this war, there's still dissent. And it seems that if your number's right, then an overwhelming number of people who are opposing the war are being detained for it.
Well, the latest show of support was quite visible last Sunday. If you saw the image from the Luzhniki Olympic Stadium, there were 203,000 people participating in a rally and concert in support of what Russia and its army are doing. Of course, there are cases of disagreement, but I think the figure of 15,000 is a gross exaggeration.
How many people have been arrested for anti-war actions then? What number is more accurate?
I don't know. I think it's a very small number. And I need to add that the Russian police is employing very, I would say, light measures to dispel those protests, incomparably more humane than many of the police actions, even in the European Union, not to say other countries.
Last week, we saw reports that there had been progress in negotiations between Russia and Ukraine. But as German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said, if one side speaks about peace talks and at the same moment bombards hospitals and buildings, then this is not really about talks. What will it take for the Kremlin to withdraw troops from Ukraine?
Well, I'm a bit skeptical about those talks so far, because the Ukrainian side, first of all, they ask for those talks to start, then they fail to show up for a day or two. Then when they ultimately show up, they have no instructions to proceed. And then one of the negotiating team is shot upon return from the first round, shot by the Ukrainian security. Then they say one thing one day, a totally different thing next day. And back in Kiev, Zelensky and his cronies are saying different things every single day.
Some could argue that that's no different than saying that there's no invasion happening and then a few days later invading a country. But at the end of the day, what is the end goal in Ukraine? Is it a pro-Russian government in Kiev?
No. Actually, what we want is a peaceful, democratic Ukraine where the rights of all people, including language rights, would be respected. Because today, in today's Ukraine, the Russian language, which is spoken by more than half of the population, is actually has actually been pressured out of the education system, of the media, and of any formal communication, which I think is a clear violation of the existing European rules and legislation. We want Ukraine to be a neighbor that would not threaten Russia anymore. We want Ukraine to be neutral, as it was declared to be when it got independence. And when you mentioned without naming it, the Budapest Memorandum of 94 about the nuclear potential. It was not Ukrainian nuclear assets. It was Soviet nuclear assets that were transferred to Russia from Ukraine, from Belarus, and other former Soviet republics. So that memorandum was based on the Declaration of Independence of Ukraine of 1991, which proclaimed that Ukraine would be a neutral and non-aligned country.
Mr. Chizov, thank you so much for spending some time with us at Upfront.
Thank you. All right.
Everyone, that is our show. Upfront, we'll be back next week.